Hey regulars, Charlie here. We all spend a lot of time thinking about what we eat, but what about what we drink? Well, our friends at Congan Water have an answer for you. When you call 800-494-8685 or visit Conwater, that's K-A-N-Water.com, you can learn more about the Congan Water machine and to check out their specials on air purifiers. Congan Water has been around for 50 years and has expanded into 9 countries, which shows that they really do have the staying power to outlast all their competition. The Congan Water machine is the only real ionizer on the market. The rest, unfortunately, are nothing more than a mass-produced water filter. While Congan Water is great for hydration, you can use it for all sorts of other health benefits, whether that be reducing acid reflux, migraine headaches, joint aches and pains, low energy, gout, and even muscle pain. Its antioxidants neutralize free radicals in your body and keep your immune system strong, while its alkaline properties balance the pH level of your body and keeps you healthy. If you drink a lot of energy drinks and have a very acidic diet, Congan Water is a must. You can even use the water for weight loss. There are weight loss plans that rely on Congan's alkaline water exclusively, but even without a plan, the water will help you lose weight. So if you're interested in improving your health and boosting your hydration, call 800-494-8685 or visit conwater.com, that's K-A-N-water.com, to learn all about the Congan Water machine and to check out their specials on air purifiers. Again, these deals will not last, so be sure to call and let them know that the Regular Joe Show team sent you.
Fighting for truth, justice, and the American way. Without the cape, we're the superpowers, not even a sidekick. Heck, we don't even have fancy gadgets. This is just Joe and his trusty microphone, made in the USA. This is the Regular Joe Show.
Oh, suck it.
Hello there and welcome, Joe Gigante, your regular Joe, here with you on a happy hump day, ladies and gentlemen. Pat yourselves on the back. We've made it halfway through another week, chock full of nonsense, assaults on freedom and liberty, in an effort by the progressive left to deconstruct our republic before our very eyes. We deserve a little credit when we keep on keeping on, and you do it each and every day, you do it each and every week. Don't think I don't notice. I appreciate it. We have 195 days to go, ladies and gentlemen, till we have the opportunity to take back our republic. The first step, not the final step, but the first step. We will get into some of that today. Of course, we have the continued lunacy, the chaos on college campuses. I mean, these college campuses are just acknowledged they've lost. I don't know why they're trying to save face. They are letting the inmates run the asylum. We have questions. I know people are saying, well, how are all the tents matching? My answer is, did you remember the summer of love of 2020 when pallet loads of bricks were being delivered to supposedly spontaneous uprisings in peaceful, mostly peaceful protests? The answer lies there. What can AI tell us? How come Chuck Schumer's getting roasted? And what did Biden say in Florida? We'll get into all of this. But first, it is 7 minutes after the hour, which, no, it didn't involve cannibalism. Well, kind of. But as we speak, it's 7 minutes after the hour, which means in Tokyo, it is 10:07 p.m. In London, 2:07 p.m. Right now in the Hollywood Hills, 6:07 a.m. And in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where $95 billion is just a drop in the bucket. What are you unhappy about? It is 9:07 a.m. That is your new and improved Biden Crime Family Time Check, TM, the Regular Joe Show, brought to you as it always is at the top of each and every broadcast hour to ensure one can't possibly claim, cannot stand on their own 2 feet and honestly look at you and say, well, I didn't know. Of course they know. And more people are waking up and finding out the true nature, the crooked as a rat's hind leg, that the Biden crime family really is. Those just a few of the multitude of locations that they DBA, do business as the Biden crime family. We're going to talk later, speaking of, excuse me, the Biden crime family, Matthew Colangelo. We talked about him a little yesterday. We want to talk a little more today about who is this man leading the charge in the hush money trial. Not only that, but there was news breaking last night. We're going to talk about in relation to this, demonstrating a clear connection between the Biden regime White House and coordination on not just the hush money trial, but Jack Smith's works as well. Now, we were told, don't you remember, Joe Biden's, I got nothing to do with this. I'm trying to track down the lineage of my uncle. I'm trying to find if I can find some spare pieces and make a stew with them. That's what we're told. And by the way, speaking with yesterday, he once again claimed to have been a truck driver. I mean, even the left is fact-checking Joe Biden at this point. Apparently, the closest he ever got to being a truck driver is he once did a ride-along for several hundred miles in a truck, in an 18-wheeler, which, of course, is like being an 18-wheeler driver, 18-wheel driver, but not being an 18-wheeler driver. But either way, I digress. So we'll talk about Matthew Colangelo. We will get into this question of collusion. Such a fine word. The left used to love to use it. Every day we heard about Russia collusion. And when we found out the person actually colluding with Russia was Hillary Clinton. Then we hear about no one's above the law. No one's above the law, which, by the way, has been the slogan of Judicial Watch since almost its inception during the Clinton era. So kind of ironic that they're trying to co-opt that phrase. And yet the ones that are claiming no one's above, I mean, you got Hillary Clinton, for the love of all that's holy. You have Hillary Clinton out there claiming no one's above the law, theorizing that Donald Trump wants to murder his political opposition. It's like kettle, pot, meet each other. Mirror, stare into it. The problem is when she looks in a mirror, there's no reflection. Think about it. You'll figure it out. I'm just, have you ever actually seen her get on a plane? But yet she says she flies everywhere. I don't know. Maybe she has an extra broomstick. Either way, I know. I'm mixing the metaphors. Vampires and witches and, I mean, who cares? Anyway, but I mean, you have this level of gaslighting as an art form, almost like I hesitate. I do, because you say these things and then it's like, okay, the next cycle around is like, okay, it got worse. But I don't think, I will say at least not since the Second World War, have we seen propaganda at such a high level across the board so many places, trying to cover for the unconscionable, trying to make the villain the hero, like the New York Times did in World War II with the Nazis. And they did, by the way. Go back, do the research. They did. It's not even a coming. They were very, very pro-Hitler, which is a scary thought, but, you know, people forget these things. So we'll get into all this, because at the end of the day, we need to know about it, but that's not the end of the story. And this is what I want to keep reminding people. The end of the story is us winning. Famously, one of my favorite stories, and there's a lot of favorite stories when it comes to Ronald Wilson Reagan, greatest president of the 20th century, one of the greatest presidents in our country's history. He was having a rather spirited conversation with Gorbachev at Camp David, if I recall. I believe this happened at Camp David. Don't quote me on that being the location, because if I had the wrong location, some weird liberal is going to be like, you lied, you lied. But the most important part of the story is they're having this heated discussion, this discourse, and they're using translators, although they do this, by the way. You ever notice several of these world leaders, they can speak English, but they still use a translator. Anyway, and Gorbachev is getting noticeably frustrated with Reagan, who's keeping his cool, because that's one of the things Reagan did. Get them frustrated. You be the cool as a cucumber. And finally, it elevates to the point where Gorbachev demands, what do you want? What do you want from me? What do you want from this? Whatever the translation was. Reagan stands up, straightens out his jacket, you kind of visualize it, right? The way Reagan walks around the table to the other side, walks up and leans over to Gorbachev and says, simple. We win, you lose. That is the kind of resolve we have to have. Now, he was facing Reagan at the time. He had an opposition Congress and Tip O'Neill and all the Democrats. He had a public that wasn't completely on board yet. He had an opposition media without anything like conservative talk radio or social media or anything else. But he understood what the goal was. He understood what needed to be done to ensure our survival, to ensure our security and our safety. And he kept his eye on that prize, and he kept working through it no matter what the obstacles were. No matter how many people told him it couldn't be done, no matter how many people told him it was a fool's errand, he was doing it the wrong way, it wasn't going to work. And believe me, if you go back and study the history, he had a lot of opposition. Even so-called allies that stood in opposition, I mean, not publicly, but behind the scenes were telling him, wrong way to do this. And yet Reagan stood his ground, and what happened next? He won. The United States won. Now, it was a short-lived victory because those that came after Reagan capitulated. Excuse me. George H.W. Bush, that is. Sorry, it gets stuck in my throat each and every time. He and his 1,000 points of light and his inability to steer the ship to shore, turning it back around into dangerous seas. Again, too many Republicans are well adept at stealing defeat from the jaws of victory, and he was one of them, which led to Bill Clinton. So then we ended up with George W. Bush, not much better. And, of course, Barack Obama. And then, finally, to Donald Trump. But the point in this is Reagan saw it. He understood the problem, but he also understood we could push through to the solution. So we don't stop with the frustration of what we see. We don't stop because it's difficult times, because the water's gotten choppy. We've got to make it back to shore. And we're not going to get it by sailing in circles in the middle of the ocean. So we will get, and that's part of why I want to make that clear, because I do bring up the bad stuff. I share some of the funny stuff. I mock things because they deserve to be mocked. We're going to get into this $95 billion boondoggle that the Senate pushed through. Now, there's 18 people that should get phone calls today saying thank you, attaboy, because they voted no. The sad part is it was only 18 people, but those 18 should be recognized. I will share those names with you. We want to start, though. Again, as always, we have some good news. This is particularly good news. And look, he gets mad. I really do forget. So you're Gen Z, right? You're Azir? Okay. You're not a millennial. Millennials are older than you, though, right? Okay. I mean, look, the Alpha, all these. I mean, it's hard to keep track of all this. So we have a resident Gen Zer, and that's important for this good news story, which is Dirty Jobs host, of course, that's Mike Rowe, makes basically the headline at the colon, so it's a statement. Gen Z is the next tool belt generation. Now, I think this is actually good news. The story covers a recent interview he did with Fox News, where Mike Rowe referred to the Generation Z as the next tool belt generation, emphasizing that many young people are choosing blue-collar careers over bankruptcy from student loans. This is in light of these protests, you know, where you're spending $70,000 to $100,000 a year. A year. I remember when my brother Paul got married, moved out of the house, got married. He bought his first house in the Washington, D.C. area. It was in the suburbs, but it was a townhome, and it cost him $73,000. And at the time, we're like, holy smoke, that's super expensive. Now that house probably costs like $700,000 in the D.C. area. But either way, $73,000 bought him a house. This is a one-year payment to go to a college where a bunch of upstart brats yell, scream, spit, harass, intimidate students because they're Jewish, apparently. Or even maybe they like Jews. I don't think it's just be Jewish if you're sympathetic to Jews. And so the response in the schools, again, we'll get into later as well, we'll reward them by letting them stay and by not punishing them, and we'll punish the students by making it virtual. You pay all this money, and you don't even get to go to class. Now, I'm going to get into this because this story has some good legs to it, has some very interesting information, and it all ties back to a Wall Street Journal article from earlier in the month of April. I will share some of those details when we get back. And I will explain why I think this is good news beyond the fact that you have fewer people spending, you know, almost six figures a year, if not six figures a year, to go to a college that indoctrinates them and ends up abusing them like we're seeing right now. I'll get into that in a moment.
The Regular Joe Radio Show.